I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History. I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho. This is The Nature of Idaho. Coming from the 1B, we're talking all about Idaho. Its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Well, today our guest is Troy New, and he's an avid rock climber based here in Pocatello. We're talking all about finding the joy of nature while scaling a wall of rock, and we'll learn more about Idaho's great climbing destinations on this episode. Well, Peter, have you been rock climbing lately?
No, I can honestly say I have not.
Oh, it's a good time.
It is. I grew up in Iowa, so I've been hill climbing.
Hill climbing counts, I guess, for something.
Yeah.
Nothing more adventuresome than that?
Not at this point, no.
Okay, well, we'll get you introduced to the whole world of rock climbing pretty soon.
Here. Excellent. This will be fantastic, as always. First, though, let's get into a bit of nature news. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the exotic animal pet trade and kind of what that's doing to our environment and conservation status of a lot of these animals. Most specifically, we're going to talk about tiger geckos. There are, it's a genus with 19 species found in China, Japan, and Vietnam that are really popular in the pet trade. These guys tend to be found in specific local areas within a mountain range or an archipelago.
Yeah. Are the tiger geckos? So these are orange and black striped or something?
They're going to be striped. Geckos are an amazing species of lizards that come in all different shapes and sizes and colorations. One of the big things is they've got these big foot pads, so they can climb up walls, and some can even climb up glass. Cool. So they're unique, and they are really popular pets. But the problem that we have is that a lot of times these geckos are caught in the wild and sent over to the U.S., or Europe as part of this pet trade. And of these animals, of the 19 species, there's 8 that are listed on the IUCN Red List. And this is the Red List is the list that tells you which animal is endangered or vulnerable or threatened. And a lot of times if you're listed endangered on the Red List, that means you become part of the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species, or CITES. The CITES is really the police force of endangered animals and plants for trade. So they monitor, regulate, and police all of this trade within these endangered species. And the tiger gecko, even though 8 of the species are listed on the Red List, they aren't part of the CITES. And a lot of scientists, researchers believe that there's already 8 of the 19 species that have gone extinct. These are the ones that aren't even there before they get listed. And what happens with these pet trades is you'll have these local villagers will go out and collect the tiger gecko, and then they'll end up selling them to a dealer for $4 to $5. The dealer then will sell them to a distributor for anywhere from $7 to $25. Then this distributor will send them to overseas to Europe and the US, and depending on the rarity, you know, they can be sold anywhere from $100 to $2,000.
Right.
So you're going from a person who collects these geckos for $4 to a pet dealer, pet trade that could sell them up to $2,000. There's a lot of people that are making money off of this. And what happens, since they're coming in from the wild, the majority of these animals are dying before they even get to Europe or US. So, you know, a villager can collect 50 of these geckos and 3 make them to a dealer. And this is really decimating not only the gecko population, it happens with frogs and amphibians. The other one that gets a lot of attention is our parrots, smuggling the parrots or birds of paradise. And it's just decimating.
So are there better, more ethical ways to, if people are interested in a pet like this, are there ways for them to get one that that doesn't involve capturing them in the wild.
Oh, absolutely. First and foremost, you need to sit down and spend the time and do the research. You need to actually do the research on what it will take to care for one of these pets and whether they make good pets in the first place. And the second one is only purchase from dealers who have absolute proof that these animals are captive bred. A lot of reptiles and amphibians are now being captive bred. The exotic birds, parrots, and birds of paradise, not as much. But you know what? Do your research and make sure this is the right pet for you and it's coming from a reputable source. If you go to a pet dealer and they can't tell you or they're unwilling to tell you where this animal came from, walk away.
Very interesting. We're always trying to preserve our wild places and our wild faces, as we like to say. And so the pet trade is part of that ecosystem that we're trying to preserve. You know, today we're going to be talking all about nature, but from a high place, I guess. We're going to be looking close at rocks, probably, as we're climbing our way up. So today we're going to talk about how many routes there are available in Idaho for rock climbing. So according to the Mountain Project, how many established climbing routes are available in Idaho? That's the question for the day, and we'll get to that after the break.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
All right, we're back, and we want to welcome our guest today, Troy New. He's a longtime rock climber and lives here in Pocatello. So thanks for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho, Troy.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So climbing, we're going to talk about rock climbing and specifically rock climbing opportunities here in Idaho. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of climbing, why do you climb?
That's a good question. You know, I picked it up about 15 or so years ago and was way into mountain biking at the time and got a little burned out on that. I got burned out and being alone too. Most of my recreation was alone and I knew rock climbing just kind of required being around people. You have to have somebody to hold the other end of the rope and I had friends that were into it. And after a couple years, just the challenge really drew me in and I got addicted to on seeing what I could do, how hard I could climb, you know. Mental, there's like three aspects to it, you know. There's a mental aspect, physical aspect, and then a technical aspect. And you might be the strongest, fittest person in the world, but if you can't hold it together mentally, you're not going to do well. And likewise, if you have lousy footwork, you know, and can't figure out the technical aspect of the sport, you're not going to do well. So you have, you know, a lot to work on. It's not an easy sport to master.
Yes, but I imagine it's an easy sport to get started in just starting, especially if you can find some people that are already initiated in how to climb and have some of the gear. How do you get started, I guess, into...
You know, that's one of the great things about Pocatello. It is an easy sport to get into. Just to get started, basically a harness and a pair of shoes, you know, would get you started. So it's pretty minimal investment. We have Ross Park, you know, right in city limits, you know, City Park, where you can go and learn to rock climb. And both ISU and the city of Pocatello offer climbing classes. You know, so you can get formal training if you want. You can just go and make some friends. And that's how I learned, was just from friends, you know, and reading. And I took a couple of classes early on to learn how to build certain types of anchors. But for the most part, it was just my friends that taught me what I needed to know. And so
are there different styles of climbing?
Yeah, there are. There's basically, you could break it into two or three styles. There's sport climbing, which is what I do, and that's all the routes have fixed anchors permanently in the rock. You just attach a, like we call it a quick draw, which is basically two carabiners with a nylon webbing holding them together. But anyway, you clip that into the fixed anchors, and then your rope goes in the other end. And that's it. It's pretty simple, you know. Most of the routes are 100 feet, give or take. Some are quite a bit less, and some are a bit more. But traditional climbing requires that you carry all your anchors with you, and they're removable anchors. So then your partner will come up behind you and clean them from the rock. And then when you're done, there's nothing left behind. And those routes can be anywhere from 50 feet to 500 feet, you know. And same with sport climbing. Some of those can get into pretty tall formations, but most of them don't. The other type of climbing that's pretty popular around here is just called bouldering. It's just what it sounds. You're climbing on boulders or very, very short cliff faces, and your protection is a pad. You know, we call them crash pads. And if you fall, you're falling on a pad, and that's it.
So the ground's not soft enough here in Idaho to fall on?
Well, this time of the year, it probably is. Normally, no. If you've been to Ross Park, you know, you're familiar with how rocky it is there. But, you know, it's a dangerous sport. You know, a shortfall can still be pretty serious. I've known one person who's died doing it, you know, and another person who fell a substantial distance and just broke his ankle. You know, so he got pretty lucky.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a lot that goes into climbing smart and the kinds of equipment that you use and protective gear that you use and understanding the techniques of, especially when you're working on higher walls, of managing rope and protection as you go up. Could you talk a little bit about the sort of gear and the sort of protections that are associated with this?
Most of the gear, I already mentioned quick draws. That's probably the simplest, which is one of the reasons I like sport climbing, is because it's so simple. And you don't have to worry about anything other than how many quick draws I need to get to the top of this route. Other types of protection, there's cams, camelots, we call them, which are retractable, and you put them in cracks. They have trigger mechanisms on them. They're spring-loaded, so you can squeeze them to get them in the crack, and then they expand, and when you weight that anchor, just the dynamics there locks it into place, and it's as reliable as an anchor that's bolted into the rock. There's also pieces that are called nuts, and they're just like they sound. They're various sizes, and you just wedge them in to a crack, and then when you fall, it's literally just wedged into the to the rock,
and that'll support your weight. Mm-hmm. If you were to fall, and it'll catch on the rope. So you were talking about, you know, really large or very high routes that you might do. Do you do those in stages?
Yeah, we call them pitches. And a pitch is, on average, about 100 feet. And typically, the way it's done, the first person, the leader, goes up and climbs the first pitch, places all the anchors, quick draws, whatever's required. And then the partner follows him and cleans all of that, and then normally just keeps on going and leads the next pitch. So you're kind of leapfrogging each other. Occasionally, depending upon your ability level, you might just follow for, you know, if it's a very difficult route and you're just not good enough and the other guy is confident, you let the other guy lead for a time. And that's a little more work because then you have to hand off all the gear. You know, if you can leapfrog, then you just can keep the gear and keep on climbing and do it that way.
Yeah, I'd imagine the last thing you really want is your forearms and fingers to really start to get tired. And you know, when you do take a pause, do you just kind of, you've got, you're hanging out there on an anchor and just, are you looking for a specific ledge that maybe has more support for your feet, or?
You know, it depends. Every formation's different. If you're lucky, then the belay stations would be on a ledge, you know, so that you can just relax comfortably, stand on the ledge. Obviously, you're still anchored to the wall, but it's not uncommon to have a hanging belay, you know, so you get to the belay anchors and connect yourself to them, and then you're literally just hanging on them while you belay your partner up, you know, so it depends. It just depends upon the formation you're climbing.
Well, let's talk about some of the places you might go here in the state to do different kinds of climbing. I'm familiar with bouldering myself, and so City of Rocks is the first thing that comes to mind when I want to go out and do some bouldering. But why don't you tell us about some of these?
I'm mostly familiar with the climbing around Pocatello, the region here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff in Idaho I haven't even seen, you know, so City of Rocks is one of the places I basically learned, and it's an amazing place. Even if you don't climb and just want to go check out the geology, you know, you've got formations there that are 400 or 500 feet tall and just neat to look at. They're neat to climb, too. Then there's other formations that are 50 feet tall, you know, so there's a little bit of everything out there. It's very spread out, so you can get a lot of hiking. And even if your main objective is to just go climb, you've got to hike from formation to formation. And
what makes for, this might be a silly question, but what makes for a good climbing area? What are the kinds of things that makes it easier rather than harder for and appealing for someone to actually climb on a rock?
Yeah, that's a great question, honestly, because some of the things that makes the City of Rocks popular is one of the reasons I don't go there very often. And part of that is that everything is so spread out. I can't go there and just put my pack down and spend a day in one area. You know, I'm going to go and do one or two climbs and then gather everything up and move to another formation and do one or two climbs. You know, so I'll spend almost as much time hiking around as I would climbing. But some people love that.
You know? It almost sounds like it's set up for people who, you know, started climbing in Pocatello at Ross Park, and then they're expanding their skill level, and City of Rocks really offers the various degrees of skill level. So as you're improving, City of Rocks is a good training area.
Oh, it is. It's great. And that's actually how it got developed. It was developed by guys that climbed mountains, and they wanted some place to go where they could hone their skills and stay fit. So it was kind of, you know, not really its own sport, you know. So that's a great point. But now it is its own sport, and the City of Rocks has a variety of styles. You know, the bouldering you mentioned there in Castle Rocks. Castle Rocks has gotten very popular for bouldering. But then there's also the sport climbing out there, and then traditional climbing. So you've multiple disciplines can be practiced out there. The places I like to go, though, I like to be able to find a wall, just a cliff wall that has lots of climbs on it, and just spend the day there if I can. I don't necessarily want to move around and hike all over the place, you know. So, and we have plenty of that in this area too, where I can just go find a place to spend the day and have plenty of challenge.
So what is your favorite spot to climb?
Probably the Fins, I'd say, is probably my favorite. I'm not sure I truly have a favorite, but I love going up there. It's very difficult. I will never run out of challenge. I will never get good enough to get bored up there, for sure, especially at my age. You know, it's just
the climbs are getting harder. So for our listeners who might not be familiar, where are the Fins located?
Yeah, the Fins are on the edge of the Arco Desert near Howe, Idaho. You can, when you're climbing up there, you're looking down on the INL directly. In fact, I think the INL owns the radio towers on the top of the mountain, and they maintain the road. I think they're the main reason we have access to that area, is because they have equipment that they're responsible for up there. And it for many, many years was just an undiscovered gem that basically all the locals had to ourselves. And by locals, it takes an hour and a half to 2 hours to get there, you know, from Pocatello or Idaho Falls. But a few years ago, it was discovered by some professional climbers, and now it has the hardest sport routes in Idaho, and probably the highest concentration of very, you know, elite level rock climbing anywhere in the country. You know, it's, so it's a magnet for elite climbers.
What does this place look like? Describe, I guess, for our listeners.
Well, the Fins describes it. If you look at it from above, an aerial view, it's limestone, and they're relatively narrow bands of limestone just sticking up from the mountainside. So it looks like a bunch of fins from the air, and that's how the area got its name. That's the rock climber's name, not like an official, you know, you won't find that on the map. You'd find it in the guidebooks under that name. But it's all limestone. It's pretty much just dead vertical. unique environment. It's right on the edge of the desert, but it's still mountain, alpine. You know, it's 8,000 feet, but arid, and it's east facing. So in that, when it's hot, we've got a shady, cool place to hang out. That when it's too hot down here at the lower elevations, so that makes a nice addition to this area. It's been available for over 20 years, but I just started climbing there within the last 10, maybe. So in this area, we've got places to climb year-round if we want to. With the basalt out in the desert west of American Falls, you've got rock that faces every direction, so you can climb in the sun or the shade or whatever you want. So a warm day in the winter, you can go out there and climb in February.
You know. So, speaking of winter, do we have ice climbing areas?
We do. There is ice climbing. I'm not very familiar with it. I've never really been drawn to it. I was just talking to a friend on Saturday who was going to do something near Scout Mountain this weekend. You know, and obviously that's very condition dependent. You know. Mm-hmm. Temperatures and whatnot. I don't know that much about it.
So my understanding with climbing is there's a scoring system or a ranking system for climbs to let you know the whether it's a beginner route or more advanced, that yeah. sort of thing. Could you explain a little bit about that for folks that are interested in sort of...
Yeah, yeah. It's called the Yosemite Decimal System.
Okay.
And technical rock climbing all falls into the fifth class category. Anything below fifth class, you know, is not that difficult. Basically, they're more like hikes
or scrambling.
Scrambling, yeah. You know, fourth class would be scrambling, still dangerous. There's some exposure. Third class is like a difficult hike. You know, I'm probably oversimplifying some of those. But once you hit fifth class, then you're usually talking about vertical or at least very near vertical. Even if the climbing's easy, the risk is high, you know, so it's usually a good idea to have some sort of protection, you know. And then when you get into fifth class, then they break it down with the decimal system, so like 5.5. Honestly, I think it kind of starts in the 5.5, 5.6 range. I've never seen anything designated lower than that. So beginner routes, I would say 5.6. 5.6 is where they start. And then you move up. Once you get to the 5.10 range, they break it down even further. So it gets even more confusing sometimes. So once you hit 5.10, then there's a letter grade attached to it. So 10A, 10B, 10C, and 10D. And then it rolls over to the 5.11 range, and you do that all over again. 5.10, I think, is kind of where you're getting into the upper moderate, you know, a little bit more advanced. Definitely takes some more experience, maybe some better fitness, you know. 5.11, 5.12, you're definitely getting into the advanced. 5.13 and 14 is elite, you know. The most difficult routes in the world are like 15A, 15B. I'm trying to think if there's harder than 15B right now. But those are like, there's a handful of people in the entire world that can climb at that level. And I mentioned the Finns having the hardest sport routes. Those are in the 514 range, hardest sport routes in Idaho.
Right.
And in the country, really, 14 D is the hardest route up there, so that makes it one of the hardest in the whole country.
Yeah. That's nice to have that available so close at hand.
Well, yeah. I think of when you look at City of Rocks, where initially it was kind of climbers were using it to stay in shape and to yeah. practice, and you've kind of got that uniqueness right there, and then now you include the Finns. You know, there's a lot of rock climbing in Idaho.
There is. And the cool thing, I started on this a minute ago and lost my train of thought. But the cool thing about Pocatello, we have those two major areas. The Finns, you know, like I said, once the elite climbers discovered it, it's a big deal. And we have people traveling from all over the world basically to test themselves, because, you know, if you climb, you can imagine if you're an elite sponsored climber, there's not many places where you can go to climb at that level. So once a place is discovered, it just attracts people from all over the world. And the City of Rocks attracts people from all over the world, but it's a different type of destination. It's, you know, vacation people, average ordinary climbers from beginner to advanced can climb there. You know, so there's a good array of grades available, whereas the Fins is pretty much advanced only, advanced and experts. But all around us, though, there's an area west of American Falls called Massacre Rocks. That's what the climbers call it. That's on the map at Cedar Fields. There's hundreds and hundreds of climbs out there that are in the 5'10 to 5'11 range. There's some 5'12s as well. And then obviously we have Ross Park, you know, so that's kind of a after work, let's just go stay in shape. Then around Blackfoot, Wolverine Canyon area, there are several little like locals only type places that I don't know if they're even on Mountain Project or not. I'm sure some of them are. I know of climbs in the Palisades Creek area, stuff around Ryrie. There's just all sorts of little hidden places to go rock climbing that would, they'll never be destinations, you know, but they're great for the locals. That's why I mentioned earlier, it's a great place to live if you like rock climbing. And even Mink Creek has some established routes, you know, with fixed anchors and stuff like that. So they're just everywhere.
That's fantastic. And it's it's such a fun sport to get into. And it, like you said from the start, it's a social sport. Almost always you're out climbing with people because you need people to help you with the gear or run, you know, providing protection on the ropes. Or I'm a boulderer, and so if I'm out bouldering, I'm always with a buddy.
Right.
And so it's just a fun activity to do at any level, and you can sort of work your way up.
And you got to add the mental component to it too.
Oh boy.
You know, there's a lot of stress and pressure, and you've got to find those, even with established routes.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to think, is this where I want to go, or do I need to go here? I
mean, well, and it's not the same for everybody,
because
I could climb it one way and my partner could do it completely different, but we're climbing the same line.
That's right.
Right? And the cool thing about sport climbing too is you don't have to go with people of the same ability level. I went this weekend with a small group, and we had one guy who had never even climbed outdoors before and was a true absolute beginner. And then the rest of us are fairly advanced, and we all had fun. There's something there for everyone, you know, and it's not like, you know, the beginner didn't have to follow any of us up anything. You know, he could just do whatever he wanted.
Right. So what Troy is saying is rock climbing is a sport that it's easy to get into.
It is.
There's going to be a lot of people there to help you out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so let's come back to the trivia question of the day. According to the Mountain Project, how many established routes are available in Idaho?
3,181 routes.
And that's got to be an underestimate of the total number of routes. That's just what's reported.
Right.
So there are thousands and thousands of established routes for rock climbers in this state.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, like I said, it's got to be a higher number than that.
I would think so. And something that just occurred to me living here, I keep going back to how great this area is for rock climbing. Well, between Massacre Rocks and the City of Rocks and the Fins, just those three major areas, there's probably 1,500 established routes. You know, so that's almost half of what's known in the state, you know. And obviously that number from Mountain Project includes alpine routes and, you know, everything that has been recorded, I'm assuming anyway. We've got a lot of stuff around here.
This is great. And we want to thank Troy New for joining us today. And if you feel inspired to go out and start climbing or discover some new areas for climbing in Idaho, you know, please visit eastidahoclimbers.com or pick up the guidebook, The East Idaho Sweet Spots. It's really going to open up some different areas for you to start rock climbing, or for those who have been established as rock climbers. So fantastic.
Great. And there's good local resources too. I try and encourage people to support the local shops, whether it's Element Outfitters or Idaho Adventure Sports. They're locals too and know the area and have good advice. And you can buy gear off of wherever online, but you're not going to get any input from those people when it comes to climbing around Pocatello.
So ask a climber.
All right. Shows are recorded here at the studios of KISU Pocatello. Visit us at KISU.org for questions, comments, and audio for all our programs. Our theme music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock, and please remember to get outside and enjoy the nature of Idaho.